I am happy to introduce your speaker tonight, Matt.
Mad alcoholic.
Yeah.
So for me, I was born and raised up in the Bay Area, San Jose, and with my parents still together and everything. I remember from the time, once I knew, my mom had told me from the time I was born, I was off and running, causing problems already. And that was kind of, even as a kid, how my life went. My mom, when I was growing up, probably about 6 to 8, somewhere around there, she started watching her, I had a brother and a sister, and she started watching her best friend's 3 boys. And through the years of that happening, we were running amok in the whole neighborhood and everything. I think by the time we were 12 or 13, we'd already had the cops called on us about 7 or 8 times by neighbors, just causing trouble, getting in fights with other kids in the neighborhood. I actually, at one point, one of those kids' older brothers threatened he was gonna meet me off the bus stop and kill me. And I was only probably about 11 or 12, maybe not even that, 10 or 11 in 6th grade. I was already getting threatened to get killed because I beat up his brother for shoving my brother off a bike. And it was just a lot of insanity just from the start, early on in my life. My family life was good. But I was usually the one in the middle of all the insanity going on in the neighborhood and everything. And I remember the last time, and it was always with the same kids and the same family. And they, I remember the last time the cops came by, they had told the other family, this is just boys being boys. They're gonna fight, they're gonna do this stuff, they're gonna do that. But that, to me, I think, looking back on it, that kind of gave me that idea that I can get away with doing these things. And it led into, through school and everything, even getting into high school, I didn't really start drinking heavily till college. But there were parties and stuff that we went to, and usually, even at that point, once I got started, I was off and running. It's almost like that, the obsession, not the obsession yet, but that allergy would kick in, like even back at maybe 16 or 17. And going back a little bit, in my family tree, let's put it this way, I'll go back on my family history a little bit. My mom's parents were both alcoholics. Her dad died, I believe it was at 34, after a night of drinking and choking on his own vomit. And then a couple years later after that, her mom passed away from alcoholism in her 30s also. So going through that, my mom ended up in foster care. And I remember she got married young in her 20s, and my dad was a traveling salesman. On my dad's side, my grandpa was a alcoholic, but he also passed away at 89, 51 years sober. And I remember, this was more recently, but I remember the last time I saw my grandma before she passed away, I hope you end up like your grandpa, where you can have a good life after all this alcoholism and the mess I had made of my life at the time. And she also told me that same day when we were there, she mentioned that I'm happy you're going the direction, you're starting to go the direction your grandpa did. Because he got into AA after he went to the original Betty Ford Center and came back and never had a drink again. And so the alcoholism does run deep in my family on both sides, but in my immediate family, I'm the only alcoholic. And from there on, my drinking really picked up once I went into college playing baseball. And because once I got into college and playing baseball, I was still in San Jose. But from that time on, we always had a place with no parents around. And all we did outside of school and baseball was drink. And it kept, like obviously the book says the disease is progressive. So it wasn't where at that time I was getting in any trouble or anything. But as I kept going, trouble came. And I ended up after junior college getting a scholarship to go out to Iowa, where I knew absolutely nobody, felt lonely out there. I didn't have my family around anymore. And what I found out there was a bunch of baseball players that also loved to drink. And it just kept going and going to the point. A big example of that, I can say, when my parents came out for my 21st birthday, they took a bunch of my friends from the team out to one of the bars in town, and she went up to the bar to get a drink for me, and she told the bartender that her son was here celebrating his 21st birthday, and that's why they're here. And she looked over at me, and I just raised my hand, like, drink's over here. And the bartender sits there and tells her, what do you mean he just turned 21? He's been in here all school year. You're telling me that one that just put his hand up? He's like, yeah, that one. He's been here almost every night, along with the same friends that are sitting around here. And that was the first point when my parents started questioning it about my alcoholism and how I was drinking. But at that point, I was still at a point where I could stop. And then I hadn't gotten in any trouble yet, but then I moved back here to California, I'll go back a little bit. In junior college still, we were here, came down here for our first tournament of my sophomore year. I pitched the first game, through a complete game, we lost 2-1, and I was done for the weekend. I didn't play, since I pitched the whole game, I'm done for the weekend, wait till another week, and we go back to the hotel that night. And I don't remember which guy it was, but one of the guys pretty much sniffed out a room with 3 or 4 girls in there. And we go up there with the beer that we just bought across the street when our coaches were going out doing their thing. And we drank with the girls. I was talking to one of them the whole time. She did end up becoming my wife, but it was everything in my life at that point was consumed with alcohol. And it was, when I left there after that weekend, I gave her my number, I had her number, never thought I'd ever see her again. Calls me the next weekend, what are you doing? And so she started coming down up to San Jose, all that type of stuff, seeing me. But even when she would come up, usually it was when my parents were going out of town and we threw parties at the house. It was always about drinking from the time I was late high school till probably a few years back, maybe three or four years, and alcohol just consumed my life from the time from being around those sports teams. Not that they're to blame, I'm the one that was drinking that way. And it, let me think here. And then, yes, when I got back from college, going out to Iowa to play, I made the decision to move in with her. I went back to my parents' house for 1 month, and after that, I moved down to San Luis. So now I'm going from one college town to another college town, going downtown all the time now, and just drinking and drinking and drinking. And eventually that caught up with me, because in San Luis I got my first DUI. And for me, I didn't think anything of it. Okay, I gotta do classes, I gotta do this. Oh well, big deal. Just pay what you have to pay and do it. And it didn't seem like to me an issue at the time, but now that I look back on it, those times were where that progression was starting to happen in my alcoholism. And then eventually, probably within the next couple to 3 or 4 years, I started becoming a daily drinker. And by the time I was a daily drinker, I could never get enough. So I started hiding stuff around the house, hiding stuff in my car, wherever I could find a spot to hide it at, in the house, outside, wherever. Well, I gotta go throw the trash out as there are shooters sitting behind the trash bin. Just stupid things. I didn't see it at the time, but I can see that full-on insanity from early on. And that kept going for like a good, somewhere between 15 and 20 years being like that. And eventually I got into AA, but I could not stay sober. There's plenty of stories some of you know, like showing up to a convention with cuts all over my face because a dog pulled me down, and getting questioned by everybody and everything. And it was just, God, craziness. It was just craziness in my life at that time. And it was one of those things. I was going to have something big happen to me to change my life, which it eventually did. But I went on still for another probably good year or year and a half drinking that way, going to the rooms, thinking I'm hiding it. And I know that's not the truth, because I can see it today, plain as day, when someone walks in here after drinking. It's, to somebody sober, it's obvious. And I was just basically at that point still making a fool out of myself and lying to myself that I don't have a problem, when a lot of other people around me could tell. And I remember this was a big turning point for me, starting a turning point, was I had gone to a rehab up in Lake Tahoe. Or was it Lake Tahoe? Well, I went to two different rehabs at different points. And the first one I came back and I was drinking almost immediately again. And Raul and one of our other buddies, a few days after I got back, came banging on my door. I seriously thought the cops were out there. And I'm sitting there like, okay, what did I do? Why are they showing up? And actually, they showed up. I don't know how they found out that I was drinking. And our buddy that's a normie is sitting there yelling at me, just going off on me. You just came back from rehab and now you're doing the same stuff again over and over. yelling at me, well, you're going to a meeting with Raul. I don't care what you say if I have to drag you out here. I go, hey, you know what? You can stop with all that. I'll go, fine. I'll go. And that was when I first got into AA. But at that point, I wasn't able to stop drinking. I would get maybe at that point, at first when I got in, I would not drink before the meeting, but then I'd drink on the way home or after I get home, thinking I'm hiding those things. And eventually the progression really started getting worse and worse. I ended up in a second rehab. I can laugh about this now because I had been going to, like I said, I'd been going to AA at that time. And about after 3 weeks of being there, they sent me to their sober living house because they told me I already knew enough about the program that they couldn't teach me anything more. But to me, that's okay. So I knew what I was being told, but I couldn't apply it into my life. I wasn't willing to do it. And actually at that time I did have a sponsor where I relapsed with twice. And I remember when I went through the steps with him, I got to step 4 and 5, and I left because I had things I was not going to tell to anybody. Things that I thought were so terrible, no one else has ever done this. That was me lying to myself or not knowing any better at the time. And that kept holding me back, and it kept me drinking. And eventually that drinking started getting worse and worse, and I was starting to get in more and more trouble with things, with the family, because I do have 3 kids and I have a wife. I don't know how she hasn't divorced me yet, but I don't understand that, because I probably would have, but I'll get into a little more of that later. I had gotten four months under my belt at one point, and I was secretarying a meeting here at the 1600 Club. And I made the ultimate decision one morning to not show up for my commitment, and I went out and drank. And then there was a situation that happened later that day with a domestic violence that landed me in jail. And I ended up spending 45 days or so in jail. And at the time, I thought that was possibly the worst thing that could happen to me. In the long run, I can say today that was probably one of the best things that happened to me at the time, because I needed to get away from that family situation. And then that gave me time to sit in jail and my head to finally, for first time in a long time, to actually clear out and have a clear mind without the alcohol. And while in jail, these guys all remember this, the few that were there, AA came in. And I remember Al was there, a couple other guys, Kevin. And the first thing I told them when they walked in, this is all a big mistake. God, was I wrong? Because that time in jail, I had a lot of time to reflect on my life and where it was going at that time, because I'm sitting in a jail cell, sitting in a jail cell all day. Well, not necessarily the cell, but in jail. sitting with my own thoughts. And it was, I say that was the best thing that happened to me, because that was, it was the beginning of me starting to change. While I was in there, I read through the whole big book, front to back, from the forewords all the way through the stories, for the first time I'd ever done that. And it was, but then when I got back out, I had nowhere to go. And my best friend Raul, when I got out, he went over to the house where I was living, picked up all my stuff, my car, my clothes, all that type of stuff. And when I got out, he's the one that picked me up too and dropped me off at the Motel 6 down on North Broadway, where there's a lot of stuff going on down there, a lot. Yeah. And I remember the first 4 to 5 days I was there, I would go to a meeting during the day, maybe even two, but then when I'd get back to the hotel, the great idea of drinking would come back. And I would run to the liquor store, drink, and I remember it was maybe 4 days or so into that, three or four, and here comes Raul again. And shows up at night at the hotel. What are you gonna do? Screw up your life some more? Don't you think you've done enough already? And honestly, that was the first time I actually listened to somebody and just told him, if I remember correctly, told him straight out, you're right. And I do remember him telling me also that for his sobriety, he needed me at the time just as much as I needed him. And at that point, I really needed him because after I got out of that hotel, I ended up sleeping in my car for 3 or 4 nights, not knowing where my life was going. I had no clue where I was going. And I don't remember the date off the top of my head right now, but I remember I got a call at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I believe it was on a Friday, if I remember correctly. And the owner from Pathways to Healing was calling me because 5 or 6 guys from AA were calling him. He said they were calling him nonstop for 2 or 3 days straight to get me into this house, into that house, to where. And at that time, I had stopped drinking at that time from those first few days, and I ended up going to Pathways. I ended up staying there all just about a little over 2 years. And at that time, I felt like, I'm gonna say this probably a few more times, but that God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, because I had no clue where my life was going at that point. And the week after I got in, I think it was, no, 2 weeks after I got into Pathways, I came into the book study on Tuesday evenings here at 1600. And I remember after the meeting, I spent probably a little over an hour talking to what would become my sponsor, Ken. And the biggest thing that changed me through that talk was him telling me his whole story. And it was like, and I remember thinking at the time, maybe the, all that stuff I hid the first time around, I can put out there. This guy was just as bad as me. It was one time, the first time I felt like I could be comfortable doing that first, fourth, and fifth step honestly and thorough, because that's what held me back early on, trying to hide things. And the only one that was hurting when I was doing that was me. And I didn't realize that till after actually doing the fourth and fifth step with Ken, how much of a weight and relief that was, just to get those, all that off my chest and not have to hide behind anything. And at that point, I had started to get into service. I was secretarying, I ended up secretarying that book study for a year, and got into service after that with the convention also, doing co-registration, and then this past year being registration, the head registration person. And it doesn't sound like it's big things, but it got me out of myself and have a purpose of being here, why I'm here. And it's not, and I stopped, at that point I had stopped fighting AA like I was when I first got here as a complete mess. And it's and through that process of going through the steps, I have realized today that all 12 of those steps are giving us a design for living a sober life and not have to drink anymore. And it's and then getting, but I did, after a year and a half of being sober, I had a relapse at that same Pathways house. And it, I actually ended up having two relapses, but it, the last one, well, I'll move back a little bit. After about a year being there, I'd become the house manager, and the last relapse I had was while I was the house manager. I got taken out of that position and had to go back to being a resident. And during that time, especially when I was house manager, I'd gotten a little, that irritable, restless, irritable, and discontent, and that eventually led me to drink again. And today I understand a little bit better why that happened, because me being a real alcoholic, I have to use these 12 steps in my life all the time. And at that point in time, I was not doing it all the time. The 10th step, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. If I was doing that at the time, I possibly could have caught that stuff and been able to avoid that relapse. And the second part was the thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And through that experience today, I understand I have to use those, all 12 of those steps in my life to be able to stay sober, hopefully for the rest of my life. And it's just one of those things. And this was the same with me when I was growing up as a kid. I had to learn everything the hard way. I had to learn it through good and bad experiences. And going through it today, my life has changed over that. I do use those 10 and 11 every single day. At night, I take my personal inventory, go back through my, review my day, and in the morning, do my prayer and meditation, trying to have a conscious contact with God. Because without having God with me, or having that conscious contact, I'm nothing today, because I've learned the hard way. I have to have that, use both of those every single day. And I can say sometimes God does work in ways I don't always understand. Like, I was for almost a year trying to get out of Pathways and get an apartment. And early on, it just wasn't working. I'd done all the paperwork for that and all that. And then the roommate I was going to move in with, probably about a month or so before we were going to take that apartment, got put in jail. So I had to make some different plans, and I was looking at another apartment in the same complex, but I wasn't sure how I was going to pay for all of that, because it was going to be double the price. And it was about 2 months ago, and this is how one example of how God worked in my life is, I knew how much the place was going to be on what I was making at the time. I wouldn't be able to afford where I'm staying now. I just moved in there on Wednesday. And my job, I did not ask for this or even mention it to them, offered me a promotion. And all of a sudden, my income just doubled, more than doubled. And now I'm able to get the place that I just moved into. And I don't always have to understand how my higher power or God is working. It's just, I've seen examples of where it has and where God has been there all along. And through my alcoholism, I can say one big thing I've learned is the persistence. Never give up, no matter what. Because I was struggling early on, today I don't have to struggle over that. And I'm just grateful that I was able to finally get out of my own way, and through all the misery I had to go through to get there, that I found that willingness finally to do those steps fearless and thoroughly, and to begin to change my life. And I can thank AA for the life I have today. And now with having that apartment, on Monday I have to call my attorney, have him come inspect it and approve it. And once that's done, I will be getting my two younger boys, I will be getting 50-50 custody of them. And if you would have asked me while I'm sitting in jail a few years ago, I would not have guessed that would be happening after this. But it's only because of doing the work in the AA, going through all those 12 steps and doing it straight out of the book and doing what it says and following my sponsor's guidance. I ended up eventually talking to him about it, because I did actually have divorce papers for my wife, and he told me, you better not do that until you can make amends to her. You're not doing a damn thing. And to be honest with my sponsor, that's probably the first the first man I've ever truly listened to and followed direction from, and have like 100% trust in him, because everything he has told me to do has worked out in my favor, or just worked out the way it was supposed to work out. Not always in my favor, but it's the way it was meant to be. And without AA and that willingness to finally do it, I can say I do not know if I would be alive today if I kept going the way I was. And I'm just thankful for all the stuff I had to go through to get here and realize all this, and finally getting that willingness to do the program and have a better life. Because it was, when I was out there, it was hell. And I didn't, each day, all I knew what I was gonna do was drink. Today, I do not have to do that if I don't want to. And today, I don't want to drink because I know where it will take me. I have that obsession and the allergy, and if I take a drink again, that's all gonna kick right back in, and I'll be off and running. And the life I've rebuilt, I'm not willing to give that up today. And I guess that's about all I got. Thank you.